Excusez-moi, please, he says awkwardly to the girl behind the counter. Un moment, I need to... God, Aaron, what must you... Let me take your bag. He gestures at the crutch I'm using, at my ankle in its surgical boot, and grabs for the plastic bag I'm holding in my free hand. It's okay, I say, laughing, though the situation isn't really funny. My ankle's fine. I mean, it's not fine, it's broken, but I can walk again now that I've got a cast. No, but still, he says wretchedly. He ushers me over to the 1970s woolen couch in the corner of reception, and we sit down facing each other like awkward guests on a talk show. For the first time, I see that he has a surgical dressing on his forehead and two black eyes. Has he been in a fight? Aaron, you must think... I mean, God, I was a total idiot. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. Sorry for what? I say, taken aback. For going off and leaving you all like that. I had no idea that Liz, that she... Inigo, it wasn't your fault. But it was. I mean, not Liz. But if I hadn't been such an idiot with the phone call, Annie might still... She might still... He stops, and I realize that he's very close to crying and is trying desperately to master himself. I also realize that I have no idea what he's talking about. In fact, I have no idea what the story is with Inigo at all. What did happen in the phone call? Why did he run off? Inigo? I have no idea what you're talking about, I say more gently. What happened? Did you fake that phone call after all? Why? What? It's his turn to look taken aback. No! God, no! How could you think such a thing? Then why did you run away? I told you, I left a note. Because I made such a stupid mistake. I suppress a sigh of irritation and wonder, not for the first time, whether Inigo was ever actually that good as a PA. How did Topher put up with him? Yes, but you never said what the mistake was, I spell out. We all thought, and then I stop. Inigo flushes again, even deeper this time, but he puts his chin up.
I know, you all thought it was me. That's why I had to leave, to put things right. The mistake? God, I was so dumb. I told the police we were at Chalet Blanche-Neige.
For a minute, I don't understand. Then my mouth falls open. I have a sudden, vivid flashback to Inigo on the phone to the police.
Yes, okay, Chalet Blanche-Neige.
Blanche-Neige, Snow White. Perce-Neige, Snowdrop. An easy mistake to make for someone who didn't speak French, but one that was fatal for Annie. Oh, Inigo, you idiot. I know Chalet Blanche-Neige, I say slowly. It's about 10 miles away, over the other side of the valley. Of course. Of course that's why the police never came. You told them the wrong place. Inigo nods in miserable assent.
It was such a stupid fucking mistake. And I realized the next day what I'd done, and I kept trying to get through to explain, but the line was just dead,
he says brokenly.
So I knew the only thing I could do to try to put it right was ski down to the town to tell the cops in person what had happened and where we were, so I left. I know it was stupid, but I just felt so ashamed, and I wanted to put things right. I knew if I told anyone what I was doing, they'd try to come, and I didn't want them to. I didn't want to put anyone in danger because of my mistake. But instead...
He gulps, and I see tears brimming in his eyes. I know he is thinking, as I am, of Elliot and of Annie, both of whom might still be alive if the police had come that afternoon, if they had known where to look.
Instead, I got lost, skied into a tree, and woke up in hospital.
He touches his forehead, the surgical bandage I saw when we sat down. For the first time, I noticed the rawness of the skin on his cheeks and fingers, the blackened tips of his ears where frostbite must have set in.
If only I hadn't,
his voice breaks.
If I didn't,
Inigo, you couldn't have known, I say softly. It was a mistake. Just a terrible mistake. These are words people have been saying to me for months, years now. You couldn't have known what would happen when you suggested skiing off-piste. It's not your fault. It was just a mistake, just a terrible mistake. They are phrases that have always seemed meaningless. Now, suddenly, it is vital that Inigo believes them. It's not your fault, I say urgently, putting every shred of conviction that I can muster into my words. I put out a hand to touch his, feeling his rough, blistered fingers. Inigo winces, but then looks up at me. He gives a weak smile. I don't know if he believes me. Maybe. Maybe not. Annie and Elliot might still be alive if Inigo had said the right name. But he didn't. Maybe he will learn to live with what happened, just as I did. Just as I do. Erin. Snoop ID Little My. Listening to Offline. Snoop Scribers 160. I don't see the others until dinner time, when the hotel serves up a hearty, veggie, unfriendly dinner at 7 p.m. sharp. There is no reservation, no picking and choosing your meal or your time. This is family dining. You come down when the chef tells you, and you get the plat du jour. Or you don't eat. It's quite restful. I'm in my room, curled up in bed, more than half asleep, when I hear the dinner bell ring, and I get up painfully, feeling the aches and pains in my bones from the last few days, and rubbing the side of my cheek where it's imprinted with the wrinkles of the pillowcase. Then I step out into the corridor. I'm limping along to the stairs when a door opens and another guest comes barreling out, almost knocking me over, making me drop my crutch. I bend over to retrieve it, feeling my ankle scream in protest. And when I straighten up, I'm about to make an irritated remark. But then I see the guest's face. He is standing stock still, just looking at me. It's Danny. Danny! I fling my arms around him, but he just stands, unresponsive, and then, like ice thawing, he seems to melt, and his arms creep around me, holding me in a hug that is at first gentle, then firm, and then crushingly hard, almost as if he's trying to make himself believe I'm here and solid flesh.
I never believed her,
he says at last, his deep voice coming to me as much through his chest where my face is pressed.
I never believed her. That text, I knew something was wrong. I set out straight away. I've never walked so fast in my life, but you were gone. I thought you died. I thought.
But he can't finish. He just gulps, pressing his face into the top of my hair, and I feel the wetness of his tears on my parting.
I should never have fucking left,
he says, and his arms tighten around me.
I knew you wasn't safe to be left alone. I told you don't do anything stupid, and what happens? skiing off piste with a broken ankle. You ain't Jason effing Bourne. I shake my head and tighten my grip, burying my face in his shoulder, trying to hide my shaking sobs. I love him. I love his attempts to lighten the atmosphere and make a joke of this, but I can't even pretend to laugh. All I can do is hold him and cry, and cry, and cry for everything.
Fucking hell,
he is saying, his voice rough and soft in my ear, rocking me back and forth, back and forth.
You're okay, Erin. You're all right, pet.
And I want to believe him, but I'm not sure if it's true.
You look like shit,
he says at last, pulling back to look me up and down. I feel like he wants me to laugh, and part of me wants to.
You should have seen the other guy.
The riposte is on the tip of my tongue. But Liz is dead, and it doesn't feel funny. Instead, I just shrug, and Danny's lip curls into something close to a snarl.
Fucking bitch.
Don't, I say. Don't. You don't know what she... But I'm interrupted by the clanging of the dinner bell for the second time, and Danny rolls his eyes.
Better go down. You ready?
Not really. You?
I'm fine, mate. You're the one who pulled off the Bear Grylls stuff.
I laugh, but my nerves are still jangling as I make my way slowly and awkwardly down the narrow stairs from my room, crutch clamped under one arm, the other supporting my weight with the rickety banister. When I enter the dining room, they are all there. All the people who are left, at any rate. Topher, Tiger, Rick, Inigo, Miranda, and Carl. They are all seated around the long dining table, and when I come in, unsure of my reception, there is a collective intake of breath, and then, to my surprise, Topher breaks the silence with a slow round of applause that is taken up first by Inigo, and then by Rick, Miranda, and all the others.
Bloody hell!
Carl says, jumping up from his place to help me with my crutch and my chair.
You look even worse than Inigo, and that's saying something.
My seat is next to Tiger, and she puts her arm around me as Carl pushes my chair in, holding me in a warm, one-sided hug.
Erin, she says, are you okay? It must have been terrifying. I'm so sorry, we never should have left you.
It's okay, I manage. My eyes are filling with tears. I can't think what to say. My ankle inside the aircast is throbbing painfully, and I can feel their eyes on me. It's a welcome distraction when Danny pulls out the chair on my other side and slumps into it with a sigh.
Smells like that bleeding cassoulet again, he says morosely. It was bad enough last time.
Somehow his irritation breaks the ice and Inigo is smiling, a watery grin.
Bit louder, mate,
Carl says as the young waitress, the same girl from reception, comes into the room carefully carrying three plates of thick, pale stew on a tray, breathing heavily with concentration as she navigates round the corner of the table.
We want to be sure she spits in the right plate.
Going by the stuff they served the other night, spit would probably improve it,
Rick says under his breath.
Shh!
Miranda hisses severely, and Rick grins and rubs the back of her neck with an easy intimacy that makes me think whatever their situation at home, these two will not be going back to England as just colleagues. Something has changed between them, something irrevocable, and Rick looks stronger, more determined than the person I met just a few days ago. Topher, by contrast, looks like a pale, deflated version of the charismatic man who stepped off the funicular. It's not surprising, in a way. He has lost his co-founder and his best friend. A terrible price to pay for regaining control of his own company by any standards, and one that seems to have aged him and scuffed away some of his confidence and sheen. He's still seated at the head of the table, though, and when the cassolet is served, he taps his fork on his glass and clears his throat, as we all look round expectantly.
Look, this won't take long,
he says, and then stops and rubs his forehead wearily, seeming to have lost the thread of what he was about to say.
But I... Well, I've had a couple of bits of news. I thought you'd deserve to know as soon as possible.
He takes a long swig from the glass of red wine at his side and then grimaces and wipes his mouth. I don't think it's the kind of vintage he's used to drinking.
The first thing is, well, there's no easy way to say this.
He swallows, his throat working.
The buyout offer has been withdrawn.
There is a murmur from round the table. It's a mixture of shock and concern, but there's not much surprise in people's voices. Rick and Miranda share a glance.
What does that mean for the company valuation, if you take Snoop public?
Carl asks bluntly. Topher doesn't answer. Rick folds his arms, his mouth a thin line of annoyance.
In the toilet, am I right? You don't need to bullshit here, Toph. You're not wooing investors. It's not surprising, is it? High-profile massacre on company time, one partner dead, arguably the one the investors liked more.
Rick! It's Tiger speaking. She stands up, her chair screeching on the tiled floor, her face twisted, her air of serenity quite gone. Rick, for God's sake, does this matter? Ava is dead. Elliot is dead. Annie is dead. Her voice cracks on the last word. How can you give a fuck about share valuation? She is right, and Rick knows it. He sinks back in his seat and shrugs slightly feebly.
It's a fact, he says, but not like he's arguing with her, just like he's trying to backtrack on his own insensitivity. That's all I was saying.
And the thing is, he's right. It is a fact, and an important one to the people who are losing their money, and the employees who may soon be losing their jobs when Snoop's bubble bursts. But Tiger is right too. It's a fact that pales into nothing compared to the loss of their colleagues.
What was the second thing? Miranda says. Her interjection into the uneasy silence after Tiger's outburst is unexpected, and Topher looks nonplussed for a moment.
A couple of bits of news, you said, she prompts. What was the other thing?
Oh.
Topher looks, I don't know, sickened almost. He rubs his face.
I got an email, from Arno.
Arno? Danny glances at me, frowning, and then I remember. Ava's husband, I whisper. And Danny's expression changes to comprehension and unease.
Has he heard?
Rick says. He looks a little sick. Topher nods.
The police told him. They haven't given him the full picture, just the basic facts that she's been involved in a fatal skiing accident. Anyway, he sent me a file.
A file?
Miranda's expression is confused. She's not the only one.
About Ava?
A folder. About lots of people. Letters, photos, videos. Ava asked him to send it all to me in the event of her death. Arno hasn't seen any of it. It was password protected, but I've been through it and... There's this one video.
He runs his hand through his must-blonde hair, tousling it, but it no longer looks like it's sticking up in a way that's been artfully tweaked into place. It just looks like a mess.
I don't know what the fuck to do with it. You know, Ava's dumped it in my lap, and the rest of it's bad enough, but this thing, I feel like it's too much for one person.
He looks, the word comes to me, he looks lost.
You want us to watch it too?
Rick says.
All of us?
His glance flickers at me and Danny. He doesn't say it, but the implication is clear. Is this private Snoop stuff? But to my surprise, Topher nods.
All of you. It concerns everyone here.
Beside me, Danny is frowning, and I know how he feels. Something is about to be dumped onto us, and I don't understand what. Why is this to do with me and Danny? Did Ava send something to her husband before her death? Topher pulls open his MacBook, clicks a link, and taps in a password. Then he angles the screen towards the rest of the table and, with a glance at the door to the kitchen to check the waitress isn't hovering, he presses play. For a minute, it's hard to make out what I'm seeing. It seems to be footage from a mobile phone, but it's nighttime and the resolution is grainy and poor. It looks like a garden, or no, a balcony, because I can see rooftops beyond. A man and a woman are standing there talking, but although I can hear the breathing of the person filming, I can't hear anything from the couple talking on the balcony, which makes me think they are being filmed from inside, through glass. The woman is leaning against the opposite wall, and her face is in shadow, making it impossible to tell who she is, but there is something about her stance that looks both familiar and more than a little tipsy. She is steadying herself with a hand on the wall, and when the man leans in, offering her more champagne, the glass she holds out is definitely swaying. The man I don't recognise, I'm sure of that. He is standing with his back to the balcony parapet so that I can only see his profile, but it's no one I know. He's handsome, in an obvious kind of way, and there is something a little patronising about his expression, like he's enjoying talking down to this young woman in front of him, enjoying her homage. He lifts his glass to his lips and drains his drink, and then he says something to the woman. The woman shakes her head. She makes as if to move away, but the man puts his arm up on the wall over her head, blocking her in. She is hemmed in by his body on one side and the wall of the house on the other. My heart begins beating faster for her. I know what is happening. I have been this woman. I know her panic. I know how much she will want to escape. And then, very deliberately, he puts his hand on her breast. I am screaming at her internally to kick his shins, knee him in the balls, get away. But I have realised with a sinking feeling that I know this woman, and I know what she is about to do. She squirms to one side, trying to get out from under his grasp, but he blocks her, putting his other hand there to prevent her escape. And now he leans in, too close for me to see what he's doing, though I can imagine all too well. My heart is racing now. Sickeningly fast. Why isn't the person holding the phone going to help? The shove, when it comes, is no surprise to me, even though there is an audible gasp from the person filming and from a few of the viewers in the dining room.
On screen, the man staggers back against the low barrier of the balcony, winded. And then the next few seconds unfold so fast, I can hardly make out what happens. The woman steps towards him, and for a second I think she is about to help him up. But she doesn't. She pushes him again. And this time, his legs go up, his glass slips from his hand, his arms windmill, and he is gone. It's only when the woman turns to walk away that we see her face. It's completely calm. It is, of course, Liz.
Erin. Snoop ID Little Mai, listening to Offline, Snoop Scribers 160. There is complete silence around the table as Topher closes his laptop and puts it away. Carl is the first to speak.
What the fuck did we just watch?
I think...
It's Miranda, speaking very slowly, her face drained of colour.
I think we just watched Liz murder someone.
It's why Ava was killed,
Topher says, and his voice is gravelly.
It must be, surely. Liz must have known she knew.
But that makes no sense,
Miranda says, bewildered.
Why kill Ava when she knew she had footage?
I'm guessing she didn't know about the footage, Topher says.
He looks indescribably weary. His face is graven into the lines of a man 10 years older than his actual age. She didn't, I say. My words drop into their silence like stones into a well, and they all turn to look at me astonished.
You knew about this,
Miranda says, and very reluctantly I nod. Yes, I knew. Liz confessed to me before... I stop. I can't bring myself to say what happened, even though I've already been through it with the police. The endless night, the pills in the kettle, that nightmarish chase in the darkness, the horror of her lonely death. Before I ran, I end lamely.
She fucking killed a man in cold blood,
Carl says, and his voice is blank with shock.
He assaulted her, Miranda says stiffly, but I don't listen to the argument that ensues. I am too busy trying to figure out something else. Who was filming? And why? There is only one explanation. It must have been Ava. She was the only other person there that night, by Liz's account, and she had the footage. She must have been the person hiding inside the flat, filming through the closed window. It's the only explanation that makes sense. And it ties in with Liz's account of the timings, Ava making an excuse to leave and go to the bathroom right before it happened.
But I am putting two and two together as the argument rages around me, Miranda's shrill voice rising over Carl's booming tones. Why would Ava be filming? Unless she knew, or at least had a very good idea, that Liz was going to be assaulted. And then I remember Liz's words to me, repeating Ava. Besides, Norland likes her type. He likes them young. Did Ava send Liz in there, knowing Norland would likely make a pass, knowing Liz would fight him off, and then what? The pieces click into place with a horrible finality. Then Ava would have video of a man, a potential investor, sexually assaulting her employee. She would have him where she wanted him. Ava is a blackmailer, I knew that already, but somehow this cruel, calculated setup is infinitely worse than anything I had imagined. She sent Liz in there like a lamb to the slaughter. What she didn't know was that Liz was no lamb. It's like Liz said, everyone at Snoop underestimated her. Well, that was a mistake. And Ava's mistake killed her. And it killed Norland too. And now it's killed Liz. She knew. I say it quietly, and at first they don't hear me, and the argument carries on over my head. But then Tiger says,
"What did you say, Erin?"
She knew. When I repeat it, the others fall quiet so that my words drop into the sudden silence like little bombs.
"Who, Liz?"
"Ava." She knew that guy would probably go for Liz. That's why she was filming. She told you, Rick. Do you remember? Norland likes her type. He likes them young.
Rick says nothing, but the expression on his face says more than any speech.
He remembers. He remembers perfectly. And he understands. Still, I spell it out for the others. She dressed Liz up and she took her to his flat, knowing that Norland would quite likely make a pass at her and Liz would panic. And she would have it all on film.
"Fuck."
It's Carl who speaks, and his face is ashen.
"She told me once, when I asked her how she got so good at persuading investors, she said, 'Everyone has a button, you just have to find it, and then you press it as hard as you can, even if they squeal.'"
"That film was supposed to be her button," I say. "Only it didn't turn out how she planned."
"And all this time," Tiger says slowly, "all this time she was holding it over Liz's head. What do we do?"
"What can we do?"
It's Topher. He stands up, runs his hands through his hair.
"Fuck! This is horrible, that fucking file! And it's not just Liz. She had stuff on all sorts of people. It's like a fucking time bomb."
"Does Arno know?"
Rick asks. Topher shakes his head.
"No, I haven't told him what the folder contained.
If this gets out, it'll end Snoop. What do we do? A company built on blackmailing investors? We might have survived Ava's death, even the revelations about Liz, but if this gets out, we could all be going down."
He looks across the table at Rick.
"I mean, literally, going down. Like, you and me could be looking at prison time. How do we prove we didn't know about this?"
"We can't bury this." Tiger's voice is horrified. "Topher, what are you suggesting? That we pretend we never saw this?"
"I'm just saying..."
Topher's voice is desperate. He runs his hands through his tow-coloured hair again, looking half crazed now.
"I'm just saying, what good would it do to drag all of this out? Ava's dead, Liz is dead, Norland is dead. No one can get brought to justice. All we can do is hurt Arno and Radisson."
"And Snoop,"
Tiger says accusingly.
"That's what you really mean, isn't it? This isn't about Arno. This is about protecting your position."
Her usually tranquil voice has grown high with anger and distress.
What about Liz?
Liz is a murderer, Topher cries. She's a victim.
She's a fucking psychopath,
Carl puts in, matter-of-factly.
Was, I mean.
There is silence while we all consider this. Because here's the thing, Liz was a victim. And just like she said, she never wanted any of this. She was just a poor, confused kid in the wrong place at the wrong time.
But I can't forget that second extra push. And I can't forget Annie. Little, trusting Annie. Perhaps they are all right. Perhaps Liz was both.
Erin, Snoop ID Little Mai, listening to The Verve, Bittersweet Symphony. Snoopers, 43. Snoop Scribers, 164.
It's still not resolved when dinner breaks up and I climb awkwardly up the steep stairs to my room, leaving the voices of the others still raised in angry discussion and circular argument. It's a relief, in fact, to stick my headphones in and slump back on the bed with my ankle raised, thinking of nothing but the music in my head. I barely hear the knock at the door, but something makes me pull out one earbud and it comes again, a brisk rap-rap. With a sigh, I swing my legs off the bed and hobble to the door. It's Danny, and he's holding a crutch.
You left this, mate.
Oh, of course. I smack my hand to my forehead. I'm such an idiot. Thanks. He hands it over and there's a moment's awkward silence. Do you want to come in? I ask, waving a hand at my slightly meagre room. I know it's not exactly the Ritz, but I'm not sure I can face sitting with the others downstairs. Slightly to my surprise, Danny shakes his head.
Nah, I'm...
Well, I'm actually gonna go out. For a drink.
With who? I'm surprised. I'm even more surprised when Danny blushes.
Eric, landlady's son, he runs the bar up the road. You know, the one with the brass counter on the corner, the petit coin. Said, you know, come in for a drink after supper.
Danny! I can't stop a smile spreading across my face.
That's awesome! Is he...
Danny raises one eyebrow, drawing out the silence, making me blush, and then he puts me out of my discomfort.
If you mean does he like pina coladas, sources say yes.
Ha! Well, go you.
You sure? I mean, you could come...
He trails off, but I'm laughing and shaking my head. No, no thanks. No pina coladas for me. I'm going to have an early night.
Okay, good plan, Batman.
He pauses, but he still doesn't leave. He just stands there, frowning down at his feet, tracing a pattern on the lurid carpet with his toe.
Fucking weird, wasn't it?
All the stuff with the film. Yeah. What do you think they'll do?
Fuck knows. I've been wondering if we should go to the police ourselves, but I don't know if there's much point.
I've been wondering the same thing, but I don't have any answers either, and in the end, I just shrug. Danny turns as if he's about to go, and I'm just about to close the door. When he swings back as if he's thought better of something, he leans in, and I think he's going to whisper something in my ear, but instead... Rather sweetly, and to my surprise, he gives me a kiss. His lips are full and soft against my cheekbone.
Love you, mate,
he says. I put my arms around him and squeeze. Love you too, Danny. Now go. You've got pina coladas waiting.
Erin.
Snoop ID Little My, listening to Carol King, Tapestry. Snoopers 28, Snoop Scribers 345. It's just over 3 weeks later, and I'm sitting by the fire in the chalet, staring out of the tall window that overlooks the valley, listening to music, and not thinking about anything in particular. It's still strange being in the chalet without working. Both Danny and I are still employed, technically, but I don't know how much longer that can go on. After Personnage was declared an official crime scene, its photo smeared all over the newspapers in half a dozen countries, it became very clear that even if the avalanche damage was repaired, it wasn't going to be possible to use it for a holiday destination, for this season at least. The remaining bookings for the year have been either cancelled or hastily reallocated to the other properties owned by the skiing company. And now Danny and I are simply waiting to find out what will happen, pacing the empty rooms, looking at the place where Annie last sat, seeing Elliot's ghost, spooning stew into his mouth, hearing the click, click, click of Ava's heels on the parquet and the slam of Liz's bedroom door. I can't stay in this place. I know that now. But I can't keep running. The smells from the kitchen are making my stomach rumble, and I'm just thinking about heaving myself out of my chair and clumping through to ask Danny what time he will be serving up, when my Snoop stream goes dead. For a minute, I'm not sure what's happened. I wasn't snooping on anyone else, so the feed shouldn't cut out like that. It was my music. I open up my phone to check on the app, but that's when I notice there's an email notification, and it's from Kate. The subject line is "Some difficult news." My stomach gives a lurching jolt. "Danny!" I shout over the sound of pots and pans from the kitchen. There's no reply, and I am about to get up and walk through to show him the notification when he appears in the doorway holding his own phone.
"Did you get it too?"
he asks, and I nod my head. "Yeah, I think we're both CC'd in. What does it say?"
"Open it and find out."
My gut is churning as I open the email and scan down the contents. Difficult decision, not practical to reopen. Eventual sale, sick pay, generous redundancy packages, 4 weeks notice. They're closing the chalet. I look up at Danny. He nods solemnly.
"Yep, that's about the size of it, I have to say. I'm not exactly surprised. What plonker's going to want to stay in a place where 4 guests got killed? I mean, it's not exactly home sweet home, is it? Even if you take the banjaxed swimming pool out of the equation. What are you going to do?"
What am I going to do? I stare back at him. It's stupid, because I've had 3 weeks to figure this out, but I'm no closer to deciding. Would I come back to work? Did I want to? Now, it's not even a question. "I don't know," I say at last. "What about you?"
"We could sue, you know,"
Danny says conversationally.
"I mean, quote-unquote generous redundancy package is all very well, but you were bloody near killed in the line of duty. I reckon that deserves something a bit more than a few weeks' pay and a box of fucking chocks."
"I don't want to sue," I say reflexively, without even thinking about it. But as the words leave my mouth, I am sure of the rightness of them. I don't want to. It was hard enough going through all this once. I'm not putting myself through it all again in a court of law, let alone dragging in Topher, Tiger, Rick, and everyone else to give evidence.
"Nah, neither do I really,"
Danny says, looking down at the screen with a little sigh.
"Could have done with the squids, though.
Well, as me old ma would say, if wishes were horses and all that.
He sighs again and then says,
shall I serve up butternut squash soup with hazelnut gremolata and charred fougasse?
Sounds delicious, I say, trying for a smile. I can't wait.
Erin. Snoop ID Little Mai. Listening to Snoopers. Snoop Scribers. After lunch, Danny and I sit down in front of the TV and I get out my phone. I've become slightly addicted to watching my Snoop Scribers tick upwards. There's nothing like news getting around that you've been almost killed to send your numbers rocketing. And I like checking up on Topher, Rick and the others too. Rick's username is Rickshaw and he doesn't have nearly as many Snoopers as Topher, but I like his music taste a lot more. He was listening to some amazing Cuban rap the other day. But when I open up the app, there's nothing there, just a blank homepage. For a second, I think I've accidentally logged out, but no, I'm still signed in, and there is my profile picture in the top right, Little Mai from the Moomin scowling out of the screen. But there is nothing in my recently played list, no suggestions of people to follow, no Snoop Scriber list. In fact, even my numbers have disappeared. Is the internet down again? But I remember when that happened before and it wasn't like this. Have I been banned? Danny, I say. Danny is scrolling through Netflix. He speaks without looking away from the screen.
That's my name. Don't wear it out.
Danny, is your Snoop working?
Yeah, why?
He says, and then opens up the app to check.
No, wait, what? I've lost all my subscriptions and all my favourites. What's going on?
I don't know. Has this ever happened before? Have we been banned?
No.
Danny is scrolling through menus.
No, I don't think so. I mean, there's nothing they can ban you for. It's not like Twitter where you can post far-right shit. There's nothing you can do apart from follow people. I think this did happen before, ages ago, when they were starting up and they didn't have enough servers. I remember a few days where the whole app just crashed and it was like this, just a blank screen. Maybe they're having server problems their end.
Maybe. I pull up Google and type in, is Snoop down? Article after article comes up. Breaking, reads the first one. British tech startup Snoop files for administration. And another one. Snoop users received a rude shock when they logged into their favourite app today to be met with a blank screen after the company shut down servers following a declaration of bankruptcy by founder and CEO Topher St. Clair Bridges.
Fuck.
I can see from his face and the way he looks up at me that Danny has just made the same search and is reading the same article, or one just like it.
Fuck. They've gone under. Rick was right.
I let out a long breath, and a tension that I didn't realise I had been holding rolls off me. It's not that I'm glad that Snoop has gone bankrupt, far from it. The thought of Inigo, Tiger, Carl and the rest of them out of a job, not to mention all the people I never met behind the scenes, that gives me zero pleasure. But it sets my mind at rest over a decision that has been gnawing at the back of my mind for 3 weeks now. What to do about Ava's video? Because that was the one question that we never resolved before the Snoop team left San Antoine. On the one hand, there was Topher's strenuous argument that telling the truth would make no one better off and would damage Snoop beyond repair and probably cost hundreds of innocent people their jobs. But, on the other hand, that equation was precisely what made keeping the secret so uncomfortable. We were not doing what was right, we were doing what was profitable,
a fact that Tiger stressed again and again in the increasingly bitter arguments that repeated themselves the last few nights of their stay in the hotel in Saint-Antoine.
"Are you telling me," Topher raged, "that if it weren't for Snoop, you'd put Ava's family through all that? Would you deliberately add another body to Liz's account? Open all those old wounds that poor man's family thought they laid to rest years ago. Torment Arno with something he never needs to know. Is all of that really worth sacrificing for the truth to come out when everyone concerned is already dead?"
"No," Tiger cried, "but that's the point. We're not weighing all that against the truth. We're weighing Snoop against the truth. That's what makes this so problematic. Topher, you can't go through life expecting everyone to sacrifice every principle they have for your company's vision. It doesn't work like that. It just makes you sound like an arrogant, entitled. Topher shouted over her.
"I am so bloody sick of that word. It's become a fucking stick to beat white men with. Do you know what entitled actually means, Tiger? It means you deserve something, that you are legally due it for whatever reason. Think about that next time you talk about someone being entitled."
And then he stormed out. Now, 3 weeks later, I do think about it. I think about what entitled really means. About the fact that the unknown executive's family are entitled to know the truth about their son and brother. About the fact that Ava's innocent baby daughter is entitled to grow up without the shadow of her mother's actions hanging over her. And I think about the fact that the dead are entitled to be left in peace. Topher is entitled, and that's the truth, entitled in the way that Tiger meant. He has gone through life taking and taking and taking, just as Ava did. They used people like their own personal chess pieces. Employees, investors, friends, relations, they took and they took from all of them. And they never accepted responsibility for the harm they caused. I think about what responsibility means. I think about guilt. I think about moving on. Erin. I am up in my room packing when the email comes through. I don't know what I was expecting, Kate, maybe with some last-minute details about our redundancy packages, or HR with some more legal disclaimers to sign. It's neither of those, and I don't recognise the email address. But the subject line says, "Sorry," and so I click through. I scan first to the bottom of the email to see who it's from, and the name there makes me do a double take. Topher. What the hell is he emailing me for? I frown. Then I scroll back up to read what he's actually sent.
"Dear Erin, I expect by now you'll have seen in the papers that Snoop has gone under. Fucking vulture capitalists. When you're hot, they can't get their tongues far enough down your throat. And when you actually need them, you might as well have herpes. If Ava was here, she'd be saying, 'I told you so,' I expect. But she's not. And so I can't even give her that small satisfaction. I got your email off the user database before we got locked out. I know, don't shop me. But listen, I wanted to say... oh, fuck it. I don't know... I'm sorry, or some bullshit like that. I'm sorry for everything that happened to you, but mainly,
I'm sorry for being such a fucking prick about Alex and Will. I keep thinking back to that afternoon at the chalet when I realised who you were, and... Well, look, I can't take the words back, but I never apologised for saying them in the first place, so that's what this is about. I'm not very good at saying sorry. I haven't had much practice, to tell you the truth, so I'll just come out with it. Sorry. Alex and Will, they were good blokes. They didn't deserve to have that happen to them, and nor did you. And I'm fucking sorry for what I implied. I don't know how much you overheard. You were out of the room at the time, but I said some pretty shitty stuff in the heat of the moment, and I'm not proud of that. Because here is the thing. Now that the dust has settled and I've had some time to come to terms with stuff, I get it. I get what losing people like that does to you. Ava, Elliot, they weren't blood, but they were the nearest thing to it. Elliot and I came up through the prep school system together, and Ava, I don't know, it's hard to explain. Even after we broke up, we never really severed that connection. So, I get it. Now, I get why you didn't tell us. I get why you couldn't leave. I think about them all the time. About Elliot being post-mortemed in some French morgue. About Ava, still up there. Frozen in the mountain passes like Sleeping Beauty. And about Annie, too, I guess. Fuck. Anyway, that's all really. I just wanted to say it one last time. Sorry. Topher. Kiss. P.S. I just wanted to tell you, that file, I handed it all to the police. It felt like the right thing to do in the end. And for what it's worth, I did it last week, before all this happened. It's not why Snoop went under. I'd like to say it was, but it wasn't. But I wanted you to know. When I look up from the screen, I'm surprised to find my cheeks are wet. And although I don't know what to say, I hit reply and sit... For a long time, my fingers just hovering over the keys. And then I type. Just 7 words. And I really, really hope they are true. Dear Topher, it's going to be all right.
Erin.
Oh, mate!
Danny's arms are around my neck, his face is buried in my shoulder.
Gonna miss you, you stupid cow!
I'm going to miss you too. I hug him back, feeling his strong shoulders hard beneath his down jacket, smelling his permanent scent of French cooking, of simmering wine-rich stews and melting butter, and sautéed garlic and all good things.
You're gonna be all right?
I nod. Because for the first time in a long while, I think I am. I have to go home, I say, and I mean it this time. Not home Saint-Antoine, but home to England, where Will's grieving parents and my own family have been waiting patiently for me to make peace with my ghosts. I have been alone with them for so long, listening to the Will and Alex in my head, trying to come to terms with what happened, with what I did, trying to come to terms with the responsibility of having said those 4 little words, "Let's go off piste." Lying there in the snow with Liz, feeling her life ebbing away beneath my fingers, I realised I can't keep running anymore.
and maybe that's okay.
And are you going to be all right? I ask.
In the distance, the coach is coming. I can hear the sound of its snow tires against the ploughed road. What are you going to do? Try for a job in one of the other chalets?
Oh, Danny says, and to my surprise, he's gone a little pink.
The tips of his ears, just visible in spite of his beanie hat, are tinged with rose.
Oh, yeah, well, actually, I've got a place lined up.
You have?
Yeah.
He coughs a little awkwardly.
You remember the B&B the police put us in?
The one with the shit cassoulet, of course I remember.
Yeah, well, they've sacked their chef and, well, a mate put in a word for me.
A mate? I am grinning broadly now.
A mate?
Would that mate by any chance be Sexy Eric the landlady's son, Monsieur Pina Colada from Le Petit Coin? Danny is blushing so furiously that I can't help prodding him in the ribs, making him laugh.
Oh, Danny, what did you have to do to earn that?
Never you mind. Danny's cheeks are glowing and he's half glowering, half grinning back. But I can see the happiness radiating out of him.
Bit of nepotism never did no one any harm.
I very much doubt it was nepotism, I say. One taste of your cassoulet and Eric would be mad not to snap you up.
I want to know more. I want to know everything, but now the coach is nearly here and there's no time.
I kiss Danny on the cheek and he picks up my other bag, and as the coach draws up, he hands it to the guy in charge of loading the luggage.
Look after her, he says in French to the driver as I make my way carefully up the steps.
I don't need a crutch anymore, but my ankle is still in the air cast.
She's not as tough as she looks.
Bien sûr, the driver calls back and winks at me. I am sliding into my seat when I hear Danny calling something through the thick window, and I pop open the little vent at the top of the pane and kneel up on the seat to look down at him.
What is it? I forgot to say, download Tune.
Tune?
It's the new Snoop, mate, only better. C-H-O-O-N.
Tune. Got it, I call back. And then the coach begins moving and I shut the window. It picks up speed and I'm waving to Danny and he's waving to me and kissing his hand, and I feel a tear tracing down my cheek. He's calling something through the glass, but I can't hear what.
I can't hear you,
I shout. My face is crumpling. I swipe at the tears on my cheek, feeling the tight ripple of the fading scar slick beneath my knuckles.
I love you!
But we're too far up the road, and I know he didn't hear either. I sink back into my seat, feeling my heart ache for everyone I've lost. Everything I'm leaving behind in the mountains. Another tear rolls down my face, and for a minute, I think I'm not going to be able to hold it back. The tears are going to come whether I want them to or not, and I'm going to bawl my heart out on the bus. But then my phone gives a single beep. It's a text message from Danny.
Tune, mate. Oh, and my ID. It's Danny Boy. Love ya.
Erin. Tune ID, Little Mai. Followers, 1.
One by One was written by Ruth Ware and read by Imogen Church. Terry Hogan was the mix engineer. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. One by One is available in print from Scout Press, a division of Gallery Books.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.